Our next case for argument is Franklin versus McCautry. Mr. Andreoli.
Good morning, Thomas Andreoli on behalf of the petitioner Harrison Franklin. May it please the court. This court should grant Mr. Franklin's petition because Mr. Franklin did not receive a fair trial before an impartial judge. Due process requires better than that. There are 2 points I'd like to address today. First, what's wrong with the Wisconsin Court of Appeals decision? And second, why Mr. Franklin's request for a new trial is properly before this court. On the first point, Mr. Franklin squarely presented his due process claim to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. He argued that he had been targeted and used as an example by the trial court judge before trial, at trial, and at sentencing. He argued that the judge targeted him and used him in connection with the judge's dispute with the Wisconsin Court of Appeals in another matter, in particular, the judge's position that Mr. Franklin and those like him, in the judge's view, convicted indigent misdemeanor defendants represent a threat to public safety and should not be released on bail automatically. The appellate court relied on 3 factors in denying the relief sought. It relied on the trial court judge's after-the-fact self-evaluation that he was unbiased. It relied upon its reading of the judge's pretrial memorandum to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals in the separate matter, which it found to be accurate and factual, and it relied on a harmless error type analysis. Facially apparent bias is not the test under due process. Judicial bias is not subject to a harmless error type analysis because it is in the proceeding, not in the outcome, that the violation of due process arises. What did the Court of Appeals in Wisconsin ignore? It ignored the fact that the judge conducted a sua sponte investigation into Mr. Franklin's criminal history before trial.
Well, your opponent says, well, they were just looking at, was just looking at material that was legitimate for the judge to consult.
The material would have been available to the judge, Your Honor. If this case were like, for example, Delvecchio, the judge might have consulted that material in preparation for trial. But the judge's own words indicate that he did not consult that material in preparation for trial. He consulted it specifically for the purpose of preparing his memorandum to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals.
Is it common for judges in Wisconsin to write spontaneous memos to the Courts of Appeals in conjunction with pending cases like the Taylor case?
I cannot answer that question. I don't know the answer. I do not believe that it is common for a trial court judge to represent himself, to invest his prestige and the prestige of his office in a dispute with the appellate court, and at the same time trade upon a defendant before him as currency in that dispute.
And did you try to find any cases that dealt with this issue?
The closest case I'm aware of in Supreme Court precedent, Your Honor, is Murchison. In Murchison, the judge acted as a one-man grand jury and then ruled upon his own contempt citation, as I understand the case. In this case, the trial court judge set up a dispute with the appellate court, used Mr. Franklin as an example. There were 2 examples. There was a hypothetical example of a wife beater and a drug user, and then there was also, to quote the judge's opinion, Mr. Franklin.
And your point is that the Franklin example would have fallen very flat had Franklin then in the end been acquitted of this more recent conduct.
For my part, Your Honor, the trial court judge could not allow Mr. Franklin to be found innocent. Think of the choices that were available to the trial court judge. He could have found another example, and I'm sure there were others available. He could have used Mr. Franklin if he believed he needed that example to make his point with the appellate court. and recused himself. Or at a minimum, he could have used Mr. Franklin and disclosed his interest to Mr. Franklin and his counsel prior to trial.
Well, why would that have sufficed?
It's my view, Your Honor, that had the trial court judge disclosed his interest and the memorandum prior to trial, that the trial court judge in this case would not have sat and presided over Mr. Franklin's trial. Your Honors, look at the various trial court... I was just thinking,
if your basic point is that the biased judge is simply something that's so fundamentally important that it's beyond any kind of harmless error analysis, I don't see how the judge's disclosing his bias helps much. If it's actual bias, obviously if we're talking about appearance of impropriety, perhaps that's different.
In this case, it appears to me to be indisputable that the judge had an interest in the outcome. I believe the judge, with all due respect, was actually biased against Mr. Franklin. I believe that is affirmed or demonstrated by the judge's comments at the sentencing hearing. When the judge sentenced Mr. Franklin, not in connection with the crimes for which he'd been charged and convicted, but in connection with the judge's dispute with the appellate court. It is also fair to say that the judge's rulings at trial convicted Mr. Franklin as surely as the jury did.
But is it a factual question whether a judge is biased? He doesn't admit he's biased. They have circumstances from which you want to infer bias. Now, is that a factual determination?
I believe it is a mixed question of facts and law, Your Honor, and I believe this court may review it de novo.
Do you have authority for that?
Williams, I believe, makes that statement. Yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting back to Judge Woods' point, if this had all been disclosed in advance and the trial court judge had said, no, I'm going to stay on the case, there's a mandamus procedure that could have been utilized.
Yes, Your Honor. I think it is a fair inference that the judge's failure to disclose is arguably the best evidence of all of his bias. I cannot fathom representing a client before a trial court judge who had used my client as an example in briefing in a very pejorative light and had failed to disclose that fact. I can see no other reason for the trial court judge not to have disclosed that fact other than that he had an interest in hearing this case, an interest other than an impartial one. Turning to the second point, the state concedes that Mr. Franklin has raised his claim for a new trial before the Wisconsin Appellate Court, but asserts that that claim has been waived. Absent a plain statement that the appeals court decided Mr. Franklin's appeal on a procedural basis, it is presumed that the due process claim survives. There is no such statement in the Court of Appeals decision. The Court of Appeals does not address the waiver question at all.
So you're saying under Harris against Reed, there's no clear and express statement from Wisconsin that it's relying on a state procedural bar.
Harris is the case I'm thinking of, Your Honor. For all these reasons, Your Honor, we submit that Mr. Franklin did not receive a fair trial before an impartial judge in violation of his due process
rights. In the Bracey case, in the Supreme Court, after, finding that Judge Maloney had an interest, remanded for evidence. So isn't this case similar? He had an interest, as you explain, but what is the actual evidence that he was biased? Where's the finding that he was biased?
The salient distinguishing factor between this case and Bracey on remand, Your Honor, is that Bracey dealt with compensatory bias. This case is case specific. There is nothing here that relies upon...
Well, it's similar, though, in the sense that the basic interest is in other cases. And so, right, it's not that he cared one way or another about Franklin. It's that Franklin is you know, Exhibit A in his dispute with the appellate court. So he wants to nail Franklin for an extrinsic reason, which was the same thing in Bracey.
I understand your point, Your Honor. I disagree to the extent that Bracey dealt with an argument by a party that the judge was biased, where the judge had not been bribed in that particular case. This case is different. The trial court judge picked out Mr. Franklin among any number of possible examples, used him in a highly pejorative light, did not disclose his use of Mr. Franklin, ruled against Mr. Franklin at trial, relied upon his pretrial investigation at trial to suppress evidence and to have Mr. Franklin shackled in front of the jury. And after trial, based upon his own self-evaluation, no, I'm not biased, went on to sentence Mr. Franklin to, in effect, and in fact, life in prison.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Andrew.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Mueller?
Assistant Attorney General Marguerite Mueller, representing the respondent. The recusal issue, as it was presented in the Wisconsin State Court, was limited to the issue of whether the trial judge should have recused himself at sentencing.
But that's not what he actually said, though. He talks about the whole trial. Just because the Wisconsin Court of Appeals addressed only sentencing doesn't mean that Franklin didn't ask that his conviction be vacated.
He did ask in the Court of Appeals, but if you look at the motion that was actually filed in the State Circuit Court in front of Judge Schrader, it was only a motion requesting the judge to recuse himself from further proceedings, and the only thing left at that point
but
was...
But no judgment had been entered, and unless Wisconsin's really different, the case isn't over until a judgment's been entered. And it seems to me, I don't know how else you would phrase it, frankly, because, you know, criminal cases have two phases. They have a guilt phase and a sentencing phase, which seems to me, until the judgment's entered, the trial court judge isn't finished with it. And if a new judge came in, that opens up the whole thing.
But once he had been sentenced, Franklin never...
That's a loser, your argument. Find something else to argue.
If we look at whether the decision of the Wisconsin Court of Appeals is contrary to or an unreasonable application of clearly established Supreme Court precedent, the answer has to be no. The two cases on which this court requested the parties to address were Bracey versus Gramley and the Aetna Life case.
It looks to me very much as though the state court thought that some form of harmless error analysis was possible in this area. And that seems to me not to be the law that the Supreme Court of the United States has announced. The list of structural errors for which there is no harmless error analysis, a very short list, but lack of an impartial judge ever since Toomey against Ohio, never mind Bracey and other cases, has been on that list.
It's very clear that had the Wisconsin Court of Appeals found that Judge Schrader was actually biased and then went on to find harmless error, that would be contrary to Edwards versus Balasag and the other cases Your Honor has just mentioned. However, when you look at the Wisconsin Court of Appeals decision, you have to realize that the argument that was made in Mr. Franklin's brief on direct appeal had three separate bases for judicial disqualification, and that brief, and it's on pages 7 through 12 of Mr. Franklin's direct appeal brief, which is appended to the response as an exhibit. I believe it's Exhibit B. In that brief, counsel started out by saying Judge Schrader should have disqualified himself under 757.19, a Wisconsin statute. Second, he should have disqualified himself under a code that pertains to judicial ethics for Wisconsin jurists. And third, last, that there was a due process violation. And in his brief, Mr. Franklin's counsel did not separate the various standards.
That's all right, but what did the Wisconsin court say about his due process argument?
The Wisconsin Court of Appeals focused on the only evidence that Franklin called to their attention, and that was the memorandum that Judge Schrader had written in the Timothy Taylor case.
Can you answer my question? Was this a very bizarre act by Judge Schrader? Certainly in our court, I would be stunned to see some memo coming up from a district court judge in a case that we were reviewing in which the district court judge said, you know, by the way, your case of Smith versus Jones, which is going to be very critical in the appeal from my recent decision in Doe versus Roe, is wrong. You know, it just is an extraordinary thing to do.
In my experience, this is unusual as well.
Has it ever happened other than this case?
I won't say yes, and to my knowledge, I'm not aware.
I mean, honestly, you're not. I'm not asking.
Right. I'm not aware of it ever happening, and I know that normally if a judge is being taken up as a party in the court.
Well, sure, that's different if there's
mandamus. But in this situation, it appeared that Judge Schrader was very irate in the Taylor case because he had imposed cash bail on Taylor, and the Court of Appeals said no under Lipke.
Right, you can't do that.
It just seems... So I think I agree, Your Honor, that...
groundwork for... So now he's decided to pick on this other case that's presently before him, which isn't even finished yet. That's the problem. He had waited, you know, 6 months and then written his letter after the Franklin case was history before him. This would be so different.
That's all true, Your Honor, but I think when you have to look at what the Court of Appeals for Wisconsin had before it, Franklin did not ever accuse the judge of any examples of actual bias that are now being alleged in federal court in habeas. At most, Franklin alleged that there was the appearance of impropriety and that Judge Schrader should have recused himself under the statute, the Code of Judicial Ethics, and then under the Federal Due Process Clause. But the examples that are given now in Mr. Franklin's brief were never before the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, and I think under the deference that is accorded to state court decisions, this court can't fault the Wisconsin Court of Appeals for not having taken the time to search the trial transcript.
Well, even after Baldwin against Reese, though, I mean, they were certainly alerted to the fact that this was the issue in the papers. You're asking for an incredible level of precision.
I respectfully disagree because I don't think it would have...
The court said the objective test of whether the trial court's impartiality could reasonably be questioned presents a question of law for our de novo review. So then it discusses that question. So isn't that the issue?
That's correct, that the court...
Now, would you explain why you think the trial court's impartiality could not reasonably be questioned?
I think, first of all, that it's the petitioner's burden under Bracey versus Gramley to show actual bias.
Well, how would he do that?
By looking to various court rulings that the judge made, the way he treated the defendant in the presence of the jury. This court on remand...
Well, there's a great deal of that, right? Isn't there?
Well, the examples that Mr. Franklin has given, I don't think, do show actual bias. The fact that, for example, relating to failing to give a lesser included offense or shackling him, both of those issues were decided by the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, either on direct appeal or in the 970-406 appeal, and the court in both instances rejected...
What about just the common sense, which the Court of Appeals didn't refer to, that having used Franklin as his example of why the Wisconsin, that Lyle or whatever decision is, was wrong, he'd look pretty silly if he then acquitted Franklin, wouldn't he?
I don't know if he would have looked silly, but I disagree with
how... I think he would have looked extremely silly.
And
why isn't that something that might give rise to a compelling inference of bias?
Because I think that the U.S. Supreme Court has only implied bias when you have an extreme situation.
There's a difference between implied bias and circumstantial evidence of direct bias. Unless you're saying that only if the judge actually testifies, yes, I really had it in for Franklin, that's obviously going to be good evidence. But
right.
I doubt that you're going to get that.
That's in very
many cases. So you need the circumstantial evidence, and here we have his memo where he singled out Franklin.
But I think that's insufficient. I think if you look at this court's decision...
That would be enough. I mean, you say trial court rulings, but those are notoriously ambiguous.
But I think that's what this court relied on in Bracey versus Schoeming on remand from the Supreme Court. This court looked at what happened in Judge Maloney's trial of Bracey and his co-defendant.
No, but that's because that compensatory bias theory, as the Supreme Court recognized, is quite speculative. Because you can argue different ways as to what would be Maloney's best way of covering up. But in a case like this, there doesn't seem an alternative thesis for how... There's no alternative hypothesis as to how Judge Schroeder could advance his interest by acquitting Franklin. He could only hurt himself by acquitting Franklin.
But if you look at the judge's rulings, Your Honor, I don't think that there is that circumstantial evidence that he did anything that would tend to provoke a guilty verdict. I mean, if you look...
Well, that's the harmless error argument, right?
No, that... I think... I'm not arguing harmless error. What I'm arguing is that circumstantially, if you look at what the judge did, just to give you one example, right at the beginning of the case, it turned out that Franklin didn't have civilian clothes supplied for him because there was a mix-up on the part of his girlfriend or family member. And the defense attorney asked... I see my time is up.
You finished.
Thank you. The defense attorney asked, would they be able to have a brief adjournment to get the clothes? Judge Schrader said yes. If he was biased against Franklin, I don't think that would have been the answer. Thank you.
Now, let me just ask you one last question. This inference of bias from circumstantial evidence, is this a factual question or a legal question or what?
I think the question of whether the judge has actual bias is a factual question. I think in terms of whether there are certain circumstances in which bias...
Well, where is the finding here? Is there an actual fact finding by someone that he was not biased?
I believe the Court of Appeals for Wisconsin did so.
Made a fact finding, you think?
Right. In looking at the memorandum that had been filed in the Taylor case...
And how does an appellate court make a fact finding?
I think you review the fact-finding of the Wisconsin Court of Appeals and give it deference unless it is...
But does the Wisconsin Court of Appeals make fact-findings?
For purposes of habeas review, yes, appellate courts can make fact-findings, and they are entitled to the presumption of deference just as if the trial court made factual findings. And in this case, the Court of Appeals looked at the memorandum and the statement that Judge Schrader had made about Franklin in the memorandum.
Let me just ask you one question. You mentioned that he did have one neutral ruling, it appears, letting him wear street clothes versus the jumpsuit, which would have been blatant if he had let him sit in the courtroom in the jumpsuit. But the shackling and the lesser included offense, are you saying that those factors have to just be viewed in isolation, because that's what it really boils down to? You know, perhaps if we didn't have all this backdrop, just the lesser included in the shackling, that would have been okay. It would be difficult to infer bias from that, but when you put it in the context of all the facts, very problematic.
I think you have to look at, obviously, the totality, but within that, the examples that are given, just because a ruling is adverse to a person doesn't mean that it's evidence of bias, and that's my point in saying that the Wisconsin Court of Appeals held, totally apart from the question of bias, that it was proper to refuse an instruction on a lesser-included offense. So I don't see how a proper refusal can be even taken into consideration in terms of a circumstantial piece of evidence of bias.
Okay,
thank you,
Ms. Moeller. Mr. Angioli, how much time does he have?